Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Hello and welcome back to the Tennis Connected Studios for April 23rd, 2017. I'm Nima Nederi alongside Parsa Sami, and we're here this week to review the Monte Carlo Rolex Masters. This week's podcast is brought to you by Top Notch Tennis Tours. Make sure to hit them up for the upcoming events in Madrid and Roma. Let's introduce this week's co-host, Parsa. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great, man. Missed you last week. Glad you're back this week. And welcoming you back with Rafa Nadal's 10th title in the Principality in Monaco. He took out Ramos Vinolas today in easy fashion. 1-3, 3-1, whatever it was. And, I mean, steamroll effect there. And, you know, Rafa's feeling good. He's had a great year. I mean, he's basically only lost to Federer and then made a bunch of finals. And finally he cashed in after losing a bunch of those matches to Federer. So I'm sure he's delighted with that. He shifts his attention now to Barcelona. And Parsa, overall, I saw some really encouraging things in this event. And, you know, I just want to briefly state that before, you know, you jump in and give us your thoughts on it. Really like what I saw from Kyle Edmund in Nadal's first match. I mean, that guy has a forehand. And I think for sure Kyle Edmund's best serve is clay, without a doubt. I mean, he's got that Western forehand, and he just clubs the ball, you know, with good margin. His backhand is solid. He's got a pretty good serve. He's a good athlete. He moves well. So I think he's got a good future on this stuff. And then I liked what I saw from Djokovic in terms of his competitiveness, even though he lost to Goffin in that nail-biter in the quarterfinals. I mean, he played, I thought, really well. And, you know, coming back from injury, some injury concerns and some other stuff, I thought that, you know, he's going to look in good spirits. I'm not sure when he's playing again. It looks like it's going to be Madrid. He hasn't taken a wild card into Barcelona, and I doubt he would play next week in three of the smaller events. Again, Andy Murray, another guy, he took that wild card into Barcelona, and didn't look that great to me. I mean, he struggled pretty much all the way through his matches, but, I mean, he's the number one player in the world still, so he's going to have to figure it out and see what he can do. And then we had, you know, Ramos Vinolas, who's super under the radar, you know, another lefty, doesn't have the same potent skills as Nadal, but I mean, this guy works hard, puts in those hours like you love to see, and, you know, it's paid off for him. And he's had a great, you know, 12 months. He made quarters of French last year. He's defeated a lot of good players. I mean, if you go on his bio on the ATP.com, you'll see him, you know, beating some really good guys. And he's just one of those fit guys, and he's going out there. He's got that lefty feel to his game. And, you know, whatever happens from this point, he made the finals of Monte Carlo. I'm sure a lot of players would sign up for that at the beginning of their careers. So what's your overall feel on this event? You know, great way to really kickstart the clay court season on the men's side. And, you know, how did you feel about Nadal and how he performed?
I mean, I think first and foremost, the most important thing is that he's the first player in history to win in one event 10 times.
Amazing.
So I think that's a significant accomplishment. His 50th overall title, sorry, not overall, his 50th on clay,
yes.
His 70th overall title.
Amazing.
Amazing. Yeah. Really incredible and awesome to see him be the king of clay again, because he is the king of clay. So it looks like the changes he's made with Moya have reinvigorated all parts of his game, not just his hardcore game that we've seen that he made finals against Federer the last couple of, the last couple of months or so. Now, you know, you're seeing the dominance back on the clay court, and so that's great to see. So we're getting this contrast going on where different players are winning different things, and you know, it was pretty interesting to see how it all unfolded, and it was the tournament for him, and he did well. So that was really, really a pleasure to watch. In terms of Murray, Murray definitely took that wild card because he needs to play those matches to figure out his game style. He came out very, very passive the entire tournament, not really hitting the ball, being too far behind the baseline, and sort of old Andy Murray, the number 3, 4, 5 player in the world, Murray, and not the one that's going for it and trying to take it to the opponent and trying to hold his court position. So I think that's why he definitely took that wild card, because he just needs more matches to figure it out. In terms of Djokovic, I didn't unfortunately get an opportunity to watch him play that much. I saw some highlights. He looked very, very good. The only thing that I noticed or saw was against Goffin, maybe he wasn't so sure of exactly what needed to be done, whereas that has become his trademark of, you know, I know that right now I have to pull the trigger, and right now I need to, the next point I need to lock it down and not make a mistake, and the next one I need to pound his forehand into the ground. I think that sort of game planning, that sort of match toughness is not yet there, but I agree with you, it does look like physically he's starting to build towards that level once again, so that's awesome to see as well.
Yeah, and I think it bodes really well for the clay court season on the men's side. And you know, if you look at we're talking about Rafa here, you know, very comprehensive performance. He lost that middle set to Edmund after winning the first set 6-3. He duffed up Alex Zverev 1-1, no problem. He had actually a very competitive match with Diego Schwartzman, you know, carrying that flag for the diminutive out there. I mean, the guy is just like, what is he, 5'5", 5'6", 5'7", with shoes on, just clubbing the ball from the baseline, has a pretty good serve for his height, guy's lightning quick, and, you know, maximizing himself, which is great to see. That was a 4-4, but a tough 4-4, and then we had Goffin, so we had a little bit of a controversy, Parsa, with that match, where Goffin was serving 3-2 up in the first set with game point. He was supposed to hold there to go up 4-2. Cedric Morier comes down from the chair and disputes the call, and he says, no, the ball is in, where then the Hawkeye technology showed that it was easily over a foot out. You know, everybody's going nuts. Everybody on Twitter, I mean, I put up this thing that, you know, what do you think about what happened? And I had probably 80, 90, you know, feedback on that, and everybody's like, some were like, I'm really disappointed in Nadal, he should have given Goffin the point. A lot of people were like, you know that's the way that it is, and how many sports do teams concede points, which is a great point, right? And for me, bottom line is, this has nothing to do with Nadal. This is not, you're not playing in a public park somewhere, you're playing the Monte Carlo Rolex Masters. You have how many lines people, you have your chair umpire, you have a tournament director, you have a tournament chief, whatever, all those people there from the ATP, they can figure that stuff out for you. Nadal's job is to go out there, play between the lines, and that's it. If there's something on his side of the net that he feels, listen, from a conscious standpoint, listen, I'm going to overrule this because it was definitely out and this, the guy deserves it, I don't want to play that way, 100% he'll do that, and I've seen him do that throughout the last 15 years. So Nadal's a great sportsman. He did absolutely nothing wrong, in my opinion. And that was just people getting excited and just basically getting on the bandwagon of the crowd. You know, like how they were dogging Nick Kyrgios in Miami when he was playing Fed. Same thing here. The crowd goes crazy and everybody gets excited. So from my perspective, you know, Nadal did nothing wrong there. I would definitely, Parsa, love to see Hawkeye technology on clay. Just gives everybody peace of mind. You know what I mean? Who cares if it leaves a ball mark? They can afford it. These tournaments can 100% afford it. These are not 250 or challenger events. These are, you know, 1,000 level events offering, you know, $1 million prize money. And this is 100% stupid. They should get that going just for peace of mind, because it's become second nature on the tour, right? Everybody relies on it. So it's like challenge. And that's it. Like, that's part of the game now. It's not like 10, 15 years ago, right, when they didn't have it. So I think definitely that's something that should be implemented. And then as we saw today, then in the final from Nadal's bracket, then he destroyed Ramos Fenoles. He goes into now, Parsa, a very competitive Barcelona field. Nishikori, unfortunately, had to withdraw with injury concerns once again. But we have Murray there, we have Dominic Thiem, we have Nadal. So it's going to be a great event, and I'm really looking forward to it. And I think it kind of still has that Masters 1000 feel, even though it's a 500. So I really like the momentum that the clay court season is taking right now.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, in terms of the Hawkeye, it is second nature. Every tournament that is played, guys are going, or and women are going, you know, challenge, whatever it is, and it it's definitely a part of the big show courts and the big matches. So continuing on the surfaces, it really doesn't make sense to not do that. So I completely agree with you there. And unfortunately, the call was on the other side of the net. And so it's really impossible in that moment for Nadal to be the one that gets involved there and try to overrule something that he doesn't know, that he can't actually physically see. Yes. He could think that Goff, that there could be two marks next to each other. One's, you know, an inch further back than the other one. And that's what they're arguing about. And he has no idea. So, you know, it's not so straightforward when it comes to those kinds of things. And you let the professionals do their job, and the umpire made a mistake. And I hope he acknowledges it. But it's unfortunate that it happens. At the same time, Goffin's got to be able to move on.
Exactly. Like, you just beat Djokovic the day.
To be a professional. Although it does suck. Like, that was awful. You know, that should never happen, especially on clay. You have that security that the ball mark is there. So what was Cedric Mourier looking at? I mean,
I don't know what the heck he was doing, man. Yeah, like,
right. I mean, that's the kind of thing you have to penalize the guy. He's not doing his job very well.
100%.
On an easiest surface. You know, if someone makes that mistake on a hard court and then you have the Hawkeye to back the guy up. Here, he literally was just not tracking the ball. So he got the wrong mark. He got it wrong. I don't know if there's any sort of penalties for chair umpires, but, you know.
Give him that red card.
Handled correctly.
But you know what, though, Parsa? The biggest L for the week for us, we should do that, eh? Every week we should start with, like, the biggest L. And, this week it has to go to Ilie Anastasi, because, I mean, the crap that he pulled yesterday in Fed Cup against Great Britain, Romania...
I don't even understand it, Nima. It's bizarre.
It's bizarre, and I think it's a fading rock star just really trying to gain that limelight as much as he can, because he's irrelevant now for the most part. I mean, a great player. You know, people, obviously, he did amazing things in his playing career, but he wasn't called, you know, Nasty Anastasi for no reason, right? I mean, this guy just... completely classless act. I mean, just, you know, degrading, you know, women and the team, and I don't know what the hell the guy was doing, but I just really hope we don't see him for a long time. He's got to go and do some counseling, get that sorted out, because that's just appalling behavior and completely unwarranted, and, you know, nobody can justify what he did. I don't care if, you know, some of the Romanian players were saying, oh, you know, he grew up in a different time and all of this. Who cares? This is 2017, right? It's not 2000. This is not 1806. You know what I mean? This is like, this is a progressive time, and, you know, nobody should be talking to anybody like that, regardless of gender or anything. So we'll see. I mean, look, we'll see what the ITF does. There's really no need. They're saying we're going to investigate. It's very clear cut, Clace, in my opinion. You know, you got to get rid of this guy and get somebody else in that position and move forward from there. So Parsa, as we move forward, I want to say one quick thing about Nadal. So, you know, as we mentioned, he won his 10th Monte Carlo title. You know, we talk about, you know, feats that will never be accomplished again. And, you know, we talk about, like, you know, how, you know, Sampras won 7 Wimbledons. Now Federer has 7. He's trying to get 8 potentially this year. That could happen. And then maybe another guy comes around sometime and he does that. But I will say right now that I do not think that anybody will ever win 10 or 11 Monte Carlo titles. Because in order for somebody to do that, a couple things are going to have to happen. You either have to start winning these tournaments at 17, 18, which, as we've seen, has become increasingly difficult, or you got to start pounding it out at 25 and go till 35 and win 10 years in a row, which is very difficult, right? Like, Nadal's been winning this tournament since 2005. So that's 12 years ago. Right, and, you know, he beat Guillermo Correa in his first match, in his first one, and now he beat Albert Vinolas in his most recent. So you're gonna have to be something, in, you know, exceptionally special to pull off that feat again. And I really don't see it ever happening. I mean, the physicality, especially on clay, like on grass, you could see somebody like coming in like a Zverev or somebody with a big serve, a Kyrgios, maybe pulling off 3, 4, even 5 years of you know great tennis, but. On clay, with the point construction and the physicality required, I mean, look at a guy like Djokovic. Look how great he is. How many of these has he won? Not as many, right? Guy like Federer's best player of all time. He hasn't even come close. So many guys, Quertin, you know, Berrettini, Bruguera. I'm going back now, Jim Courier. All of these guys, like, they didn't even come close to that. And those guys were all Hall of Famers. So I'm putting that right now on the table. I know I'm not coming up with something like, you know, like enlightening or whatever, but I really don't think anybody will ever top that feat.
And I will counter that and say that records are made to be broken.
For sure.
And so I don't know if this one will ever be, but I know that there's some hunger kid out there that's going to pursue it and try to. And that's the beauty of sport.
That's the beauty of it.
Even though it's a yellow tennis ball that's going back and forth all around the world, we continue to watch, even though it's the same product. Because in sport, you just don't know what's going to happen. And so that's why we stay tuned. That's why we marvel at the amazing. And we love to be amazed more and more and more. And so who knows how it's going to unfold. But I agree. I mean, that is some steep climb that someone's going to have to go on in order to get it. So who knows? Nima, what do you think about 10 Roland Garroses for Nadal?
That's just another incredible feat to win 10. First of all, if you win 10 Grand Slams, you're already in the record books. But to win 10 of the same Grand Slam, that to me is just, it's incredible. And he's got a shot. I mean, think about it. Federer doesn't, I would be shocked, Parsa, if we haven't talked about this, but I would be shocked if Federer plays the French Open. It doesn't make sense. You know what I'm saying? Like, you play the French Open because you believe you can play the French Open, not just to show up and just play for fun. Now, the one thing that he said, Fed, that he said in that match for Africa that he had with Murray, they interviewed him again about it, and he said that, you know, for me to, you know, not play the French, then I'm going to have a major break between Miami and, you know, the grass court season. So there's that concern. But subsequently, if he's not feeling it, he said he's going to jump on the clay a couple weeks before Roland Garros. And if he's feeling good about it, if he's like, yeah, I can do something there, then I think he plays. I mean, he can obviously gain points, which will help him this year, potentially get back to number one. But I would love to see him there just because it's Federer, but it doesn't make sense for me from a coaching perspective or anything else at this stage. And then you have a guy
like Nima right now.
What
is he just not playing? What are these breaks that he's got built in? Do you have any insight into his
I know. Well, he's playing against Isner on the 29th in Seattle. So he's got that match for Africa 4 or 5 or whatever it is. It's another charity. And then he's just...
But is there training going on, or is he just...
Well, of course his training... I think he's... First of all, he's relaxing because he's had a very... played a lot of matches. I think he's 17-1 this year. The only one coming to Donskoy in Dubai loss. So he's played a lot. He's feeling successful. He's feeling confident, without a doubt. I'm sure he's training. I think it's more about, you know, like rehab right now and prehab. He's getting his body as strong as possible because he knows that he's going to play the two grass court warm-ups, then Wimbledon, then take a little bit of time off. I would suspect that he misses Canada and he plays Cincy US Open. Then I think he takes a little bit more time off. Maybe does one of the indoor Masters and Basel. He has to do that one because I know he's already signed up. And then he'll be there for the World Tour Finals just based on what he's already done this year. So he's got, what is that? 3 grass, maybe 2 hard, 3 indoors. So maybe about 8 more tournaments for the year for Federer.
And maybe a clay one.
Maybe a clay one, yeah. But again, I would be shocked if he plays. I'll be happy if he plays. I want everybody to get that straight out there. I hope that he plays the French Open. I'm just saying that it doesn't make sense to me if he plays that tournament. So, you know, that's what I got. And then as we were saying for Nadal's prospects of winning his 10th Roland Garros, we have Federer, who's probably not going to play. And let's be honest, he's not really going to be that much of a factor. You know, Djokovic still figuring out his confidence and his fitness, and the same for Murray. And then we know that Stan plays well in the slams, but he can be flaky as well. So apart from those 5 guys, we don't have a lot of other players that have been winning slams, as we know, and that can really, we can count on to do some damage. It's possible. You know, a guy like Dominic Thiem is good on clay if he's fresh. You know, maybe Nick Kyrgios can do something with his serve and his power game. You know, we got Zverev. But apart from that, I don't see anybody else really coming out of the woodwork and doing anything. So you got to go with a guy who's won tournament 9 times at this point. So it will be interesting to see, and that's why I'm really looking forward to this clay court season, because I think it's a little bit more of an even playing field. It's not like it's not, and it's, I mean, credit to Djokovic when he was rolling everybody, but when he's not doing that, it just makes it a little bit more exciting from an overall perspective. So I think that's kind of what I'm looking forward to. But Parsa, moving now to the women's side, and we have basically the first major clay court event for the women kicking off this week in Stuttgart, which is, I think, an amazingly attended event. They do a fantastic job over there in Germany. Sharapova is coming back into action, so that's going to be amazing. I mean, and you got to look at this, Parsa. You know, so much controversy around this from the players, from the agents, from everybody, men's and women's. Everybody's been chiming in. Should Sharapova be playing this event? I'll tell you right now, I don't think she should be. I think 100% she can play next week. But for her to still be banned up until the midpoint of this event makes no sense for me to then all of a sudden be entered. Because when the draw is made, right, the draw should include active players that are able to participate in the event. Not a player that has an asterisk beside her name that says, yes, she's banned, but not midway through the event. I mean, that's completely... It's taking away the integrity of the WTA, in my opinion, right? And now you have a situation, now she's entering and she's playing, and she's probably going to do well, which, again, I'd like to see her back because she's such a, you know, a big name for the sport. And we'll get into Serena. Obviously, we heard that, you know, she's having her first child this autumn, which is awesome for her with everything that she's achieved in her career. It's nice to see that she's moving into the next phase of her life, and I still suspect that we'll see her back in 2018, but you know she's shutting it down for the rest of this year. So to have somebody like Sharapova, who's won 5 slams, been number one, and is such an iconic personality, it's great to have her back. I just don't think that this is the week for that. What are your thoughts?
You know, ultimately, you know, whether it's this week or next or previous 2-3 weeks or whatever it is, you know, she's gonna come back. You know, and it's, you know, really just, I guess, a matter of tact, a matter of taste. They're allowing her to do it. So it may be unfair to the WTA. They're allowing her to do it. So it's something that they're okay with. So therefore, as a consumer, as the fan, I'm definitely okay with. I would love Sharapova to be back in the fold and back in the mix. I sort of was on her side's with the whole drug controversy with her, mm-hmm. Just because she'd been taking it forever and it was okay. And she, you know, all of a sudden in this particular year, they banned it and they didn't even let her know, you know, okay, you have, every player's supposed to read through the 70 pages of documents that there are. But the truth is, like, you know, there's Murray Sharapova and then there's me, right? So yeah, me, you may not tell me that, hey, something you've been approved for the last 9 years is now banned, you know, but send a simple letter and say, listen, they've decided that this is now performance enhancing, and in 2017 or 2016, it's no longer an acceptable substance to take as an athlete. Mm-hmm. And then everything changes, right? Then she can make her adjustments. So for that little nitpicky thing to put someone out of play, it sounds like there was almost a little bit of a stretch, a little bit of a vindictive sort of quality to it. Mm-hmm. So in that way, you know, I think everybody wants this to go away. You know, the sponsors, they didn't drop her, you know, they were for her, and they stuck with her, and they're not only that, they're proud of her and boast that, you know, as always, Maria fights and she comes back and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, it's interesting because I don't know who made these decisions or how all of this really in detail came undone, but I don't know. All around is sort of like a stinky mess, if that makes any sense. So
yes,
you know, let's move on from it and let's get her back on tour and hopefully playing at a high level.
Yeah, which I think she will, because I mean she's been training a lot. She's been doing physical stuff. You know, you follow her on Instagram, you see what she's every day. She's going hard. And I think that that's going to bode well for her. I think she's going to be hungry. She's going to want to come back and, you know, salvage this last year and a half, which she's been out of action and, you know, and missing it. And you always know what you have when it's gone, right? So I think she's going to have a lot of perspective. She's going to cherish these moments. And I definitely think with the fact that, I mean, Serena has been her major roadblock. I would be surprised if she doesn't win a slam this year. Because look, Kerber's not doing much this year. There's nobody else, maybe Konta's, you know, playing decent, you know, a couple other players, but there's nobody knocking them dead right now. So if you have, you know, somebody like Sharapova, I mean, Venus might be able to do something too. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Venus wins Wimbledon. Maybe Sharapova wins either the French or U.S. Open. Very conceivable. And, you know, we'll see how it goes. But definitely happy overall to see her back. Just, I still stand behind my point that, you know, I would prefer if she wouldn't play this week. I just think it's fair for everybody in the draw.
Absolutely. And, yeah. And in terms of Serena, I mean, it's terrific. You know, that's just facts of life. You know, things yes. have to get going
yes.
in that way. And,
yes.
You know, so, and at the same time, dare I say that, you know, she saw Federer take this amount of time off and come back refreshed and even better. And I think maybe this sort of life perspective will give her that same exact quality. Who knows?
Of course. But, and she's a, you know, even a bigger champion than Federer. If there's right. one person, it's her, right? There's nobody else ever, basically. So, I mean, just incredible. And we'll see how it all transpires. But looking forward to it. The clay court season's shaping up really nicely. Looking forward to this week in Stuttgart, as well as Barcelona. And there's another ATP men's event, a brand new one in Hungary, which has some decent players in there. And then Parsa and I, obviously, will be back in a couple weeks' time to preview the Madrid Masters. Luckily, we're back to, you know, a dual format with the men and the women, and then subsequently Rome, which is the same thing. And then that all, you know, breaks it down for us as our road to Roland Garros continues. So with that in mind, Parsa, thank you so much for joining us this week.
All the best, my friend.
Thanks. Thanks again. And then also for everybody out there looking to get down to Madrid or Roma, make sure to hit up Top-Notch Tennis Tours for all your ticket and traveling needs. As well, for anybody who follows us on Twitter and on Instagram, you'll know that we're doing a contest right now with Mouratoglou's Academy. And it's a really nice prize pack from the coaching staff. So, you know, get in on that, because it's going live until May 1st. And then at that point, I will pick the winner and ship that out to you guys. So, good luck to everybody out there. Make sure to keep your questions coming to Parsa and I. We love it. Enjoy the tennis this week. And Parsa and I will be back in a couple weeks' time to preview Madrid. Be good. Enjoy the tennis and the awesome.